Advantage.
The Money Show.
Small business.
Where have you been?
I was on the Muddy Island.
To visit the Queen.
To visit the Queen.
You got to run.
I was on the Muddy Island to visit the Queen, where it gets dark at 4 p.m. 4 p.m.
And only lighted about 9.
And by 4 p.m., you know, mostly over here, your day is halfway done. It's not even close to the end. But it's quite strange working for a good 6 solid hours in the evening. Just to get you to the other side of the end of the day. It was very odd.
No, very strange. I mean, they say mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the noonday sun. South Africans go to England in winter.
they do.
When it's dark and miserable.
And dress in denial that they actually get cold.
Very silly. Now, why did you go? I mean, you went about this time last year and you went and met entrepreneurs and you went and had some fun. What was your purpose this time?
Bruce, I delivered a talk for a company called Software AG, and they are big into digitization. And the talk was about how, as a big corporate, if you're not on key with digitizing your business and getting into that space, you're being eaten from the sides by very, very dynamic entrepreneurial businesses that have adopted the Internet of Things, that have adopted digitization, that have got big data and algorithms, and they are building fantastic business models, and they're eating you and your industry while you are not aware.
So how did the talk by the South African who wasn't dressed properly in the middle of winter in London go down?
Well, apparently the British Army really enjoyed it.
What?
From the feedback I got. There was a General Semple there who spoke. He's the first ever CIO in the British Armed Forces, so they've created that post.
We're Chief Internet Officer, Chief Information Officer. Okay.
So it's about getting the information completely integrated between the sea, the air, and the land, so they can make effective decisions, quick decisions, and more useful decisions. It was fascinating to hear how they're busy building that side of, let's call it the business. And they actually introduced, so they've got sea, they've got air, they've got land, and now they said they've got data. Or let's call it the information highway. It's the fourth area of military focus.
No, cyber warfare is a potential battleground of the future. It's quite scary.
It is, and it's one that's been won by the Russians, and that's common knowledge, and that's spoken about extensively. So that was very interesting. There were 200 British CIOs and CTOs in the room, and there were some fearful looks that I certainly got once I started to talk about some of the entrepreneurs that we're working with here and there, in fact, and what they're doing. Because these big businesses and these big organizations with many pillars and many different silos are taking forever to turn and adapt and change into more digitized businesses. So that worked very well. And then I did some work with 12 entrepreneurs, 12 really grumpy, hard, tough entrepreneurs. They were difficult people to work with, but that went very well indeed.
Why are they difficult? Just because they're so driven and passionate and good at what they do?
Or they're
just suspicious of this guy from South Africa coming to tell them what to do?
Suspicious in part, but the presentation that was made resonated very strongly. It was the introduction of the asset of value as a concept, something that was immediately adopted on board over there, and then a lot of questions as to how do you build an asset of value and why do you do that and how does it fit together.
I want to talk to you about the opportunities. You've set up the context very nicely of Brexit Britain and what entrepreneurial opportunities exist, because many South Africans would like to go and exercise their entrepreneurial muscle in a place like the UK. So let's talk about that. But first, I've got a call from Graham Pienaar. Graham is the founder and director of a business called Direct Retail Goods. He's on the line to us from Centurion. You got a problem that you'd like Pavlo to solve for you, Graham?
In a nutshell, yeah.
Explain.
I started a business a couple of years ago. I found a unique gap in the market to import medical test kits, home test kits, where in the comfort of your own home, you can literally test yourself for whatever you think you might need and get the results instantly. You know, a couple of years ago, I was looking for a product that can do a blood type, for instance. I didn't know what my blood type was. So I went to all the pharmacies, had a look for the product, and I couldn't find it. Just to backtrack a little bit, I've been in that industry for over 12 years within the FMCG sphere. So I found a small gap in the market. What I then did was I sourced biomedical manufacturers in China and India to actually source the product itself. Mm. What I then did was I flew to China, signed an acquisition for the sole rights to sell this product within the whole of Africa. The business has been running for just under 2 years. What I then decided to do is I then decided to take the risk and self-start up business, including doing obviously the imports, you know, the licenses, the packaging, the listings, the training terms, and at the end of the day, build my own home-based brand of products. In the past year, you know, we've tested the market, listed the one specific line item, which was the blood type home test kit. And to our surprise, you know, it was a fantastic success. You know, just under a year, we sold over 12,500 units through the likes of Pick and Pay Pharmacy, Dis-Chem, Click.
I'm not sure where the problem is here, Graham. You seem to be well sorted. Let's get to the problem.
The problem where I'm at now is that it's a self-sustainable business. You know, the margins are good, the gross profits are good, but to take a product to the next level is a matter of growing the category. I've got my retailers now, so the respective buyers at all the major pharmacies saying to me, you've got to build the category yourself, all right? Take it to the next level. So what I've done is I've sourced 3 additional new lines, but the problem comes in is as a small business, it is self-funded. I've been able to use the profits that I've gotten to do the marketing, do the acquisitions, do the listings of 3 unique new lines. The problem comes in is now the funding. So yeah, I slipped with this little hurdle in front of me, and I think to myself, okay, what do I need to do to source the funding by, in essence, getting an investor that's willing to take the product and brand and company to the next level? I could do it on my own. Where I'm getting at, though, is in terms of the industry that I'm in, I'm
Graham, unfortunately, your cell phone is now letting you down. But I think we've got your story, and you've got a great thing going, Graham Pienaar. Well done. I mean, he's the founder and director of Direct Retail Goods. We're not going to get any more information out of him. Have you got enough to work with there, Paul?
Yeah, I do actually. You know, it's. I think you might be looking in the wrong places for funding, actually, Graham, because you've gone and you've done things right. In the first instance, you found a great product. I was going to say, well, perhaps you were too product-centric, but after I heard you say that you've sold the product, that you've listed the product, that the product's moving effectively off the shelves, and you're looking now to get to the next level, if I understood you correctly there, you're saying you need to build that category. So building the category is really creating more demand for that product and for ancillary products. So you'd be both bringing in new products that are self-diagnostic kits, and you would be running promotions to pull the products off the shelves. And in both those instances, on the basis that you've already got the business going, I'm surprised you haven't been able to raise funding. I'm not sure where you're looking for the funding, and I'm not sure what kind of deal you've put down for funding. But
my producer tells me that, you know, he was kind of thinking of Dragon's Den and Shark Tank and those things, but they're kind of so oversubscribed. No. Where can he go?
Yeah, you know, so there are these crowdsourcing platforms. It's not suited to crowdsourcing, no. Bruce. This is relationship-based funding. You've got to identify, in my view, an angel investor, somebody who has seen your track record, seen the performance of the business, because this is not a startup. It's a next-stage opportunity.
Where do you find an angel?
It's relationships. It's about speaking to people extensively. And, you know, there's an entrepreneur I did some really interesting work with 6 years ago who started a publishing business. And 6 years ago, to start a publishing business takes a lot of courage. And he was struggling to find the money. And what we did is we created a list of, it was 82 possible people who would be interested in investing based on either the business or him as an individual. And we organized the list from number one all the way to number 82, the most likely to the least likely. And what we then did is turn the list upside down.
So you start on your least likely. So you start on the least likely. You get rejected fast.
You get rejected fast. And as you're being rejected, you hone your presentation, you hone your answers, you hone the value proposition and the invitation for the funder, and you get your metrics right. Because if you've never raised funding before, it does require practice. And as you start to speak to people, if someone is interested in funding, but they don't invest in your particular space, and they can see that you will not be an embarrassment to them should they refer you to a colleague, that's how it normally comes about. And that's how you source angel funders. It's called pavement pounding. You've got to let people know that you're out there, and most importantly, leave a sterling impression with them, because they'll refer you on.
A good place for Graham Shorty to start would be to talk to the buyers of his products, to say, you know, you carry other lines of product. Who's in the pharmaceutical funding space? And they might very well be able to put him onto that first step on the ladder.
Yeah, I would be apprehensive to do that, Bruce, okay. Because the business is still fairly early stage. And I think an angel funder would have a lot more patience with Graham, because I think Graham has an opportunity here to build it to a significant level before he works with a corporate funder.
But you can tell that he knows what he's doing.
Oh, completely.
And that's what's so
and that's why I'm surprised to hear.
I want to get to Brexit Britain as well. Graham, thanks for your call tonight. It really is, I'm inspired by you. I think you it's going to be great. But good luck finding the funders. If anybody wants to fund Graham.
Let us know.
011-883-0702, 021-446-0567.
The Money Show.
Small business.
Pavlo Fotidis, Brexit Britain, does it have any opportunities? Because they're about to get hit by an inflation shock because of the devaluation of the pound. They're going to feel what it's like to be South African.
Well, let me give you a sense. In the early stages of 2015, Bruce, their GDP was running at 3.5%. In the context of the Eurozone, that country was pumping.
It was.
But pumping. They're now expecting it to fall to 1.4% during the course of this next financial year. That's a massive fall. Next thing is, the currency was running at $1.7 to the pound. It's dropped to $1.25 to the pound. It's had a massive. That 26% collapse is driving inflation already. In fact, 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before, 4 weeks before, petrol was selling at around 95 pence. It's now selling at 119. It's a massive increase.
That is an increase of, say, let's call it 20p just to make my sums better.
It's massive.
But that's like R4 a litre more.
Yeah, literally. Mm. Yeah, perhaps even slightly more.
More.
The small medium enterprise confidence level, they measured on index points. At the beginning of 2015, it was running at plus 40 index points. It's now running at minus 42 index points.
Now, you would think that sort of environment would make entrepreneurs really depressed, because that's business confidence falling, it's consumer confidence falling, everybody's feeling grim and miserable, but you didn't find that.
No, I didn't. But there's a big difference between, and I've always said it and argued it, between an entrepreneur, business owner, and a business owner. A business owner wants predictability. They want something fairly steady. They're interested in creating, in many instances, a kind of lifestyle business. An entrepreneurial business owner, and I see it here in South Africa, Bruce, we're growing at 0.2% purportedly our GDP. In certain sectors, I'm working with entrepreneurs where there's no growth, and yet those businesses are growing at 40, 50, 60% an annum, per annum. It's because they're eating the lunch of the business owners in those sectors. An entrepreneur is going to look at flux and change, which Britain is going to endure and experience on such a profound level, I think, in the next 12 to 24 months.
Because a lot of the guys you were talking to were people who'd lived in Britain for 10, 15 years. They weren't British. They were from other parts of Europe and are looking to harvest huge opportunities in that market.
Well, they came into the environment because it offered so many opportunities. They came into the environment because the ease of doing business in Britain is dramatically higher than it is anywhere in Europe. And interestingly, I got some mixed views, and people were saying post-Brexit, you know, I'm not a British national. I've been living here as a European national. I've run my business for 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. And now, do I continue to invest or not? What does Brexit mean for me? The uncertainty is driving so much apprehension. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting from that point of view.
What opportunities are you seeing there?
Massive opportunities. Obviously, with the collapsed currency, the tourism industry is going to continue to boom. You know, I managed to get some time off and I went to the Natural History Museum.
Isn't it fantastic?
There was a queue.
It's free.
It's free, and the queue was about a kilometer long. Yeah. It was crazy. It was absolutely insane. And it was both made up of Britons and a lot of foreigners. I walked into Harrods and you couldn't move. You could not move. You know, the collapse in the pound has been very good for the retail environment. It's been very good even in what is approaching to be midwinter, the tourism aspect over there. But I think this is where the real opportunity lies. You know, Britain has got a very long and deep history in OEM, industrial economy.
OEM?
So original equipment manufacturers. They make some of the most well-known pumps, industrial pumps, for example, machines.
The north of England is still very industrial.
Very, very, very much so. Very much so. They've lost a lot of it, but it's still very industrial from that point of view. The Midlands area, as you move to, let's call it the east of London, there's a very firm and sustainable, in my view, automotive trade. But what's going to happen with Brexit is the moment you create friction into the OEM sectors, Bruce, where you make the importation of the many, many widgets, the 20,000 pieces that go into a car, not all of those are made in Britain. A lot are imported in from tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 suppliers. The moment you create friction because you're no longer part of a free trading environment, it can have a dramatic impact on the performance of those OEM manufacturers. And I think one of the most exciting areas for Britain to look at now is the idea of reindustrializing through very smart, small manufacturers that use supremely clever technology so that they can start focusing on an import replacement environment feeding into the OEM tiered supply chain. In addition, their autumn statements that they made quite recently, in other words, their budget, they're putting £1.3 billion into innovation and technology R&D.
But they're spending money where it matters in the small business space.
They're spending money in clever tech.
Yeah.
The third area that I think is going to be fascinating, services and technology, if you think about it, are very hard to put tariffs on. Because I think that Britain is going to hit a wall of tariffs as it trades into Europe. You can't have your cake and eat it. No. It's simply not possible. In that environment, I would be looking at some clever tech, and I'd be looking to ship my tech exactly in the same way that Israel has done. And I think if you're a smart entrepreneur and you spot those opportunities, you're building directly into trend.
Really interesting. Those are the lessons from London with